Welcome back to the Florida Travel Fanatics Podcast. I'm Clark.
I'm Heather.
This is episode 18, St. Augustine, How to Enjoy This Ancient Florida City.
In the latest Florida travel news, spring break season is here. Tampa Airport estimates 2.7 million travelers from March 7th through April 10th, and that's the most volume that TPA sees all year, and that includes the holiday season. We've mentioned in previous podcasts about some of the pros and cons of spring break beach vacations. So if you're a college student, you may enjoy getting together with thousands of other students and swarming the beaches. But if you're a family with smaller children, you may want to reconsider your destination during this period of time. Florida's early growing season is coming to harvest. We're starting to see the signs for you pick fruits and vegetables. And if you haven't experienced this before, it's exactly what it says, you pick. You go out into the field, you get a bag or a box, and you pick your own vegetables and fruits. It's really fun. We mentioned in recent podcasts that it is strawberry season, and there are still many places that you can pick your own fresh fruit. Blueberries are just about in and will continue to be available until late April. Just like strawberries, the blueberry season is one to celebrate with a festival in April, and it's a great activity with children. There's nothing better than fresh air, sunshine, and teaching kids where their food actually comes from. Pack a picnic lunch to have after you finish your pick. A few tips for making a picking day a great one. Make sure you have hats, long sleeves, closed-toe shoes. You will be in a field that is in an active growing season, and you'll want to protect yourself from the grasses, the vines, the bugs. It's not a bad idea to apply a little bug spray and sunscreen. Bring some bags or boxes for your produce just in case the farm you're heading to doesn't provide them.
Yeah, I'll second that about the bug spray. We went out picking blueberries.
Yeah.
March 2020, right when the pandemic was started. It was a very social distance thing to do then. And I made the mistake of wearing flip-flops or hiking, you know, open-toed shoes. And the fire ants just tore my feet and ankles up. I didn't consider there would be fire ants out there. So bug spray for sure. And a fire ant bite hurts for, it just burns for about 4 days. It's something you have to be careful with in Florida.
Kind of takes the fun out of the picking. So yeah, if you can get yourself, you know, geared up a little bit, it's a really, really fun experience. We took our kids apple picking a lot in Maryland. We had more opportunities to do that than some of the berries and things like that. And, you know, it's the best time. Take a chance to really teach your kids where their food comes from. It's not always in a plastic package in the grocery store. And, you know, it's a learning experience to get a little dirt on your feet and get a little dirt on your fingernails and just really enjoy the experience. The Wall Street Journal recently published an article about resort fees or destination fees, or as President Biden calls them, junk fees. Resort fees are an additional amount of money charged by resorts or hotels for specific amenities like internet, gym, and fitness center use, access to pool or beach with towels, umbrellas. Sometimes it's a cocktail that you get. I mean, it can be anything. The frustration with resort fees is that there are hidden costs that might not appear until you actually book or arrive at your hotel. So a $120 a night room that you think is a great deal may have a hidden fee of up to $50 a day, making that room not really such a deal. The same thing is happening on budget airlines, which we've talked about before. A low-cost flight with added fees to get your bags in a desired seat, you're not saving any money. One way to combat this is to stay at hotels that have rewards or you're a loyalty member. Booking with points will oftentimes give you a reprieve on your destination fees. I did find a great website called Resort Fee Checkers, and we'll put that in the notes. And you can put in a specific property and find out if they are known for charging extra fees for your stay. And there is a way to combat some of the resort fees. The first thing I say is whatever you are challenging, just do it nicely. Don't pick the time at check-in to go back when there's a line behind you. You know, just kind of be conscientious about it. But you can, if you perchance have a disability and you know you're not going to be using the fitness center or you're a business traveler and you're arriving late at night and leaving early in the morning, you know you're not going to be going to the beach, consider talking to the front desk about whether or not they can waive those fees. Most of the time, like I said, if you're nice, they will. We've stayed in a Marriott in Sunny Isles, a Residence Inn, for I don't know how many times. How many?
A dozen.
A dozen, at least. And most of the time,
for business.
It's been business. at the time, the company that Clark was working for wouldn't pay a resort fee for business. They were very, very accommodating to take that off for him.
Yeah, they offered after about the third or fourth time. And that article was good because basically what it says is what you said. Ask nicely, but just ask them to remove the fees. The hotels train their people to try not to do that. But if you're persistent, you know, you can.
But don't cause a scene over it. You can actually, after the fact, if you really are really challenged by it, you can go to your credit card company and ask them to remove it. I mean, there are people who challenge it with, you know, lawsuits and things like that. And I don't know if it's worth that time, but check ahead of time and then you won't have a problem.
Right. Yeah. And the president's got a point. There's so many hidden fees out there. He's trying to get some legislation passed across the board to make those fees have to be disclosed. Like I was looking at those new airlines, Avelo and Breeze, the other day when we did our last podcast and talked about those new airlines flying to Florida. And you have to dig through the website to look for the fees. They go out of their way to hide it. And then they get you kind of as you go on. So,
and a lot of times in the fine print, a hotel room might say taxes and fees included, and that may not be
the
situation.
That's not the resort fee. That might be like the tax, county tax fee.
So don't take that too lightly. Yeah,
definitely check. And if in doubt, you always call the hotel and ask them.
If you are using amenities at a resort and it's an exceptional resort, that's part of the cost of doing business. But when they're just sort of added on for the sake of them making a little extra profit, that's silly.
Good example. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Or if you're in your room and you're paying a fee for internet and your internet is patchy, it's not working well, you can't get, you're not receiving the amenities that you were promised, that's definitely a time to go to the front desk and say, could you please take this off my bill because you have evidence that it's not working well.
Yeah, it's been spotty. But an example of where fees work, when we stay at that Sunny Isles residence inn, which is North Miami Beach, if you pay the resort fee and you're staying there for vacation, for $30 a day for everybody in your room, you get reserved lounge seating across the street, you get a shuttle to the beach, you get a rental bike, you each get a free cocktail per day. So you look at what all that might cost if you paid for all that stuff separately, it certainly would be more than $30. To your point, in those cases, you're getting a good value of it and just pay it. And that's just, you don't have to rent the chair, you get a free drink.
If you go over to a beach in Miami and you pay out of pocket for umbrellas and chairs, you're looking at much, much more than $30 a day, especially if you have more than two
people.
And
you're not going to get cushioned nice chairs either. They're just going to be kind of standard.
Exactly. So keep an eye on the fees.
In this episode's Florida Travel Tips, as Heather mentioned, it's mid-March here in Florida and it's spring break season. If you're coming here for spring break, we highly recommend avoiding Miami Beach and Panama City Beach due to persistent problems they've had in the last 2 years with a bad crowd of people showing up. Both cities have had shootings occur, and both towns are working to clean things up. We'll be watching the media all month to see how effective these efforts are. Miami Beach has made we talked about this last couple episodes about the sports week, and they're trying to have better activities there. The good news is that, of course, Florida's a big state, and there's plenty of other nice beach towns to enjoy for spring break, including Fort Lauderdale, Clearwater, St. Petersburg, Jacksonville Beach, Pensacola, et cetera, et cetera. Fort Lauderdale back in the 80s was the place where there were a lot of spring break shenanigans going on. And they cleaned all that up and moved it, went someplace else. Now Miami Beach is going to have to do the same kind of thing. So,
do spring breakers in Florida go skiing? They live at the beach all the time.
Oh, true. That's true. Yeah. What do you do when you're from, your point, for spring break? Yeah, you go someplace else, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You live in Florida. Right. We recently discovered two really cool digital Florida newspapers. They're independent. One is called the Miami New Times, and there's one called the Broward Palm Beach New Times. That one covers Broward County and Palm Beach County, and that's a large area that starts at Hollywood Beach and goes all the way up to the Palm Beaches. That's really a two-county area. These papers are really cool, just independent papers that are basically owned by the employees. They're part of a larger group based in Denver, Colorado, called the Voice Media Group, which also has other independent newspapers such as the Denver Westwood, the Dallas Observer, and the Phoenix New Times. These papers have an edgy, independent feel to them, and they're full of really cool articles about local arts and food and tattoo shops in Florida, including the current state of marijuana legislation. And they're just a fun read. They're just really clever looking, kind of has that independent, non-corporate feel to it. And thankfully, they're free to sign up as long as you subscribe to one of their newsletters, which I'm sure generates advertising revenue for them. Or you can pay $50 a year for a digital subscription, and that supports independent media.
I really like digital newspapers.
Versus print.
I mean, it's nice to hold a newspaper or hold a book or things like that, but you start to just get into this, massive amounts of paper that you end up just recycling.
Packing things with, free packing materials.
Yeah, exactly.
If you live in the Miami-Dade County area, Broward County, or Palm Beach County, or you plan to travel there in the near future, definitely check out these free digital newspapers. And it's great to be able to support independent media as well, not corporate media. We'll be a better place with more free writers out there. There was a good article recently from CNN about Apple AirTags. So if you're not familiar with what an AirTag is, it's basically a tracking device made by Apple. They cost $30. The general use, most popular use, is to put them in your luggage when you're flying or traveling. And it basically lets you track where your luggage is. So you go to an airport, you have a checked bag, and it goes on the plane. You put the AirTag in the suitcase or in a holder on the outside, and you use the Find My app on your iPhone, and it will show you exactly where your bag is within a few seconds. So that way, you know, if you lose a bag, you know what airport it's in. The person that wrote the article said the interesting part is not knowing whether to find your bags, how you find your bags if they're lost. It just gave them more peace of mind when they travel because they know, well, you know, with 100% certainty your bag is on that plane with you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the other end and say, where's my bag? And apparently it gives enough detail, it actually will tell you approximately where it is in the cargo hold. The person who wrote the article said their bag was in the cargo hold well forward of where they were seating. Like, my bag's got a better seat than I do. They're $30 a piece. It only works with iPhones, just an Apple specific thing. There's another brand, a product called Tile, that works with both Android or iPhones. They're a little bit cheaper depending on which model you have. That's an option if you don't have an iPhone. You can use them for things other than luggage. Like, you can have your small one attached to your keychain. You can put it in a golf bag or anywhere you want to track something.
I thought you were going to say, when you said keychain, I thought you were going to say attach it to your kids.
Your kids? You could do that too. Yeah, your keys, your keychain. Yeah, your two-year-old. Where's your two-year-old? I don't know. Pull up the app. Let's track him. The AirTag is more expensive, but it updates faster. It's more accurate. It uses the iPhone network out there, basically some frequency on your phone and builds kind of a network, and that's how that stuff gets tracked. And that's why the AirTag is quicker, more accurate, and more reliable than Tile. We're going to be getting some for the next time we travel, and so we'll report back on what we think and how they work.
I always think about that, whether or not we got there in time. You know, if you're a little close to what time you have to have your bags there to guarantee that they're going to get on, you kind of go, I hope I got here in time for my bag, you know, or they slap a big late thing on it.
Yeah,
at least
heavy is a big one.
At least you know. We did have some family that was traveling to Europe last summer, and they did not have their bags, but they knew exactly where they were, and their bags arrived back in the United States about 2 days after they did. But they were able to keep track of everything. Yeah, and know where it was coming.
It's a cool technology, for sure.
It doesn't change necessarily the inconvenience of losing your bag, but it definitely gives you peace of mind of knowing where it is.
Yeah, if you think too, other situations, like, you know, sometimes we'll be somewhere and we'll check out of a hotel, but we'll check our bags with the hotel, you know, do something and then fly home maybe that evening. It'd be great to have the confidence to know, hey, my bag is still where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, they've checked it, but it's still there. So that's the value of the person who wrote the article said this. Knowing where your bag is even better than being able to know you can find it if it gets lost. So
I've looked out the window as they're putting on the bags and wondering, you know,
is my bag
out there?
Or you're late at night, you're at baggage claim and bags are coming out. You're like, please, Lord, let my bag be here. Please, please, please. You know, and then if you had the tracker, you would know, you know, that's, hey, yes, it's here. It's in the airport. It's a matter of time before it comes out.
Exactly.
Moving on to the main topic, how to enjoy St. Augustine. And as usual for us, there's a lot to talk about in this episode. And as always, we'll put the links in the episode notes to all the web links and apps and things that we talk about. First and foremost, we highly recommend you install an app on your phone called, appropriately, Visit St. Augustine, which includes a list of things to do, places to stay, restaurants, events, and of course, the St. Augustine downtown map. The events portion of the app is really cool, and it shows you, you put a date range of when you're going to be there, say over a weekend or over mm-hmm. a long weekend or a week or whatever, and it will tell you what's going on specifically. Searches and tells you, hey, that, like, I looked to see what was up this weekend. There's actually a Celtic Games going on mm-hmm. there this weekend nearby. So it's a nice up-to-date app and a great reference to just find things and you know, also find restaurants on the fly. Great thing about St. Augustine, it was founded in 1565.
Gee whiz.
It's the oldest continuously occupied settlement of European and African American origin in the United States. So it's the oldest town in America. It was founded 42 years before the English colonized Jamestown and 55 years before the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock, if you can believe that. The Spanish establishment at St. Augustine is the nation's first enduring settlement, they like to say. It was established by the Spaniard Admiral Don Pedro Mendez de Avilés, and we'll put some links in the episode notes to some cool websites that have some of the history of the city. It's really fascinating, the control of Florida between the Spanish and the French and the English and the battles and things that went on there, and how many different flags flew over the fort at different times is pretty cool stuff.
The history and beauty of St. Augustine is breathtaking. The Spanish architecture is incredible to see, with 40 buildings built during the colonial era and another 37 newer buildings built in the same style. The two biggest and most popular attractions are the Old Fort and the Henry Flagler Hotel that is now the campus of Flagler College. The fort is called Castillo de San Marcos, and it's actually a national park. It's $15 to walk in, or you can use a national park pass if you have one. You can also purchase an annual pass or get a free veterans or military national park pass there. Clark is a veteran and was able to get a new annual pass there, and it saved us $30. That was what it would have cost us to get in.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy tickets in advance. Most of the fort is in the open sun, so if you're coming during the summer months, we'd recommend visiting there first thing in the morning and then doing other parts of the town in the afternoon. The fort is over 400 years old and was the site of many battles through its history. The fort itself is built from a type of brick made from the shells called coquina, which they started using after the fort was previously made of wood, and it actually burned down several times.
I think they said seven times, the guide said, or eight, the fort was burned down.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah, they gave up on
I'm like, okay, don't do wood anymore. So it was burned many times with battles with the Native Americans, the English, and the French. There's a good-sized public parking garage near the fort if you're driving into town. So keep that in mind for parking. You really don't...
Parking's tough down there.
Driving's tough down there.
Yeah, driving.
Parking, definitely park. The Henry Flagler Hotel was once called Hotel Ponce de Leon, and it's listed as a National Historic Landmark. Built by the railroad magnate Henry M. Flagler in 1888, the Ponce is considered one of the finest examples of Spanish Renaissance architecture and one of the most exclusive resorts of its day. It's now the main building of the Flagler College, and it's open for tours, which we didn't get a chance to do, but I would totally
be ready to do that. For sure.
And tours are $17 a person. They book quickly, and they do have to be purchased in advance. You have to schedule that, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's most college campuses in the United States, you can just walk in. You walk around. It's pretty much an open area. But this is a complex, like a hotel complex with gates and all that. And it's the student center and the hub and a lot of the classrooms. It's the heart of the college. And you will, when you see it, you will want to walk in and take a tour. It's a beautiful place. But day of, you won't be able to get tickets. So definitely book that in advance. And that is on the trolley tour, by the way.
As I mentioned before, we were there a few months ago. We spent about 24 hours, and the moment we got there, we're like, this is not going to be enough time. Right. To do it right, plan on spending at least 2 days there. The Old Town Trolley has suggested a two-day itinerary on their website, and I would definitely, you know, take a look at that before you go. For lodging, we'd recommend either staying in town. There are a lot of old bed and breakfasts and smaller boutique hotels. Or stay over in St. Augustine Beach, which is only about 10 or 15 minute drive from the main part of town. If you're planning to use Old Town Trolley, you can park in their parking lot for free. And the Old Town Trolley does have a free beach shuttle, but it takes 45 minutes to get from your hotel to the downtown, and it stops running at 4:30. So if you really want to go to the beach, stay at the beach. And if you really, really want to spend time in Old St. Augustine, we recommend staying in the city. If you're coming in as a single or a couple, we recommend staying in the city of St. Augustine. When we were there a couple of months ago, we stayed in a really neat bed and breakfast called Casa de Solana, and it is an absolutely beautiful old home, and they had excellent breakfast. The room was beautiful. We would definitely stay there again. And interestingly, the house is located on Avilés Street, which is named for the admiral that established St. Augustine, and it's the oldest street in America, and it looks like it.
So our advice on how to best enjoy the city is definitely get a trolley or some kind of tour around the center of town. Given that the city is over 450 years old, the streets are really narrow and difficult to drive through, and parking can be scarce in the main area of town. We travel in our Ford F-150 pickup truck and found it really difficult to drive around and try to find places to park. It's definitely a walk in town, and there's a lot to see and do, especially in the center part of town. The old town trolley tickets are $37 a piece, and they're good for all day. You can get on and off the trolley as much as you want. There's 23 different stops around the city, including the Fort, Ponce de Leon's Fountain of Youth, the Old City Jail, the Oldest House, Potter's Wax Museum, City Gates, St. Augustine Marina, Mission of Nombre de Dios, and other interesting spots. If you stay on the trolley continually, it's always a tour going around. It's a 90-minute tour. And as you hop off, you can hop off, do that spot, hop back on, and continue the tour. And the guides they have are terrific and very knowledgeable.
And very funny, too. I do believe if you purchase your tickets for the trolley the night before, there's a little bit of a savings as opposed to the same day.
Yeah, we saved, I think, $5 at buying it
in each advance. Person, yeah.
There's a couple other trolley companies there. There's Red Express. There are also people that do like 4-person golf cart tours where you get your own private guide. We saw a number of people doing that. And there's also a horse and carriage trips that you can do throughout the day as well. Old Town Trolley also has a ghost tour, and they've got some other types of tours. So definitely do that. Go around and see the town. As Heather said, one day is not enough in St. Augustine. The trip around the city on the trolley, just can't say enough, gives you a perspective. And then you go back and you'll see some restaurants and places and bars that you might want to hit. We found a live music venue one night that was fun. We were there for about an hour having beer.
I'm not usually one to carry a backpack, but this is definitely a town where comfortable shoes, a lot of the streets are cobblestone, where comfortable shoes. Grab a backpack, so you're going to see a ton of little shops, and it's beautiful. You might want to pop in and get, you know, a little bar of soap or some olive oil. Yeah. or different things like that, and you're going to not want to have to carry them around and go back to your hotel or your car.
Yeah, what's neat, too, most of the restaurants and shops are more upscale. You know, you don't have the tacky beach town t-shirt shops. It's really some nice shopping and certainly great places to stop and eat. We saw 4 or 5 restaurants that we wanted to try. A big event every year is the holiday annual Knights of Lights light display. It's very popular. It was inspired by the ancient holiday practice from the Spanish of having lit candles in their windowsills during the holiday season. They have over 3 million bulbs around the city. It runs from, the lights are on from the week before Thanksgiving to the end of January, which is nice. You can get trolley tickets to do a night tour, but they go from $37 to up to $90 for this event. So this is something we probably choose to walk, especially given this is the cool part of the year in Florida and the fact it gets dark around 4:30. We'd save the money and spend it on dinner someplace else rather than spend $90 a person, but that'll be our preference.
Absolutely. And speaking of dinner, there are plenty of really good restaurants in St. Augustine with a wide variety of styles and prices. One we wanted to try but didn't have time is a restaurant called the St. Augustine Fish Camp, which is a seafood restaurant on the west side of town. On the San Sebastian River. It's also close to the St. Augustine Distillery and the San Sebastian Winery, both of which are open for tasting. We really enjoyed the tasting at the distillery and thought their gin was excellent. Definitely an American-style gin, not like juniper heavy. Everything was absolutely delicious. If you go in expecting London dry gin, it's going to be completely different. But it's super fun to get that experience, and then you can go up to the rooftop bar on the winery, and they have live music. So that's a great way to spend your day and then your evening. Thursday through Sunday, they have the live music from 1 to 4, and on Fridays and Saturdays, they have live music from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. That side of town tends to have more available parking spots, so don't hesitate to drive over there if you happen to be staying at the beach or you're a little bit further across town. There's another distillery in town called City Gate Spirits, which makes rum, whiskey, and vodka, and it's one of the stops on the trolley tour. Both City Gate and St. Augustine Distilleries products can be purchased, of course, in their shops, but also at most Total Wine stores across the country. And we had other times, we were going other places in our trip, so we were like really didn't want them rattling around the back of our car. So knowing we could get them in our hometown, we're pretty excited about that. For you beer drinkers, there are 4 good breweries in St. Augustine, appropriately named Ancient City Brewing, Bog Brewing, and they have a food truck, Old Coast Ale Brewery and Tap Room, and the newest addition is Dog Rose Brewing. For you chocoholics, be sure to check out Whetstone Chocolates, which has a tasting and a tour, and that's only $11. if you want to continue on the chocolate tour from last episode, you can go up a little bit further to St. Augustine and get to Whetstones. Whetstones is also on the trolley tour. So you can get your chocolate on, you know, as you get off the trolley. Right. Yeah. So there's an excellent pizza place called Pizza Time that was recently ranked by TripAdvisor as the number two pizza place in the country. We had a couple of slices and we'd agree it's very good New York style pizza. We literally said to each other, this is some of the best pizza I've ever had. And actually was. We found out later that it was the second in the country.
Yeah, we didn't know. We just thought it was amazing. Amazing pizza.
The slices were about $10 each, but they were very large. Big. We bought three and it was too much. I had one that had burrata on it and tomatoes and garlic chunks and basil, and it was fantastic. You had a chicken parm pizza
yeah,
which was phenomenal too.
It was amazing pizza. There's always a line out the door, mm-hmm. so don't think you're going to probably come back and have no line. It's a very New York. You close your eyes and open and you think you're in Manhattan.
Oh my goodness.
It's very New York style.
And
the people that work there
only take cash.
Cash only.
And they will direct you through the line. You stand, pick it out.
Yeah, and it's by the slice. I mean, they'll make a whole pie for
you. They'll make it,
yeah. But they're so big, you just go and pick out slice. That typical display case with five or six different pies, they call them pizza pies, and you pick a slice up, and they're vegetable ones and meat lovers and pepperoni. It's really good. Really, yeah. It's worth going on your way. It's a cheap dinner too. Phenomenal pizza, and we went back to our hotel and had red wine outside in the courtyard, which was nice.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Met a couple people too.
Yes,
we met a really lovely couple from, two friends mm-hmm. from Germany.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
There's a local company called St. Augustine Experiences, which runs some really great walking tours of the city. Those include craft beer tours, chocolate tours, chocolate. Heather likes chocolate. Cocktail, wine, and food tours, and they're rated really well by TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor actually awarded that company their 2022 Best of the Best award. The prices for some of their tours range from a $25 guided walking tour to a $260 or more food and wine tour. We'll definitely be trying these the next time that we're in St. Augustine, which will be in the near future, probably over a long weekend. A couple of their tours are what are called land and sea experiences, where you have food on board a sailing yacht out on the water. And then when you come back in, you go into town to three restaurants to sample their food. That sounds like fun.
That does sound like fun.
If you'd like to get on the water, St. Augustine has several good options, including the Scooter Freedom Charters, which is a 72-foot schooner that departs daily from the city marina. There's also St. Augustine's scenic river cruises, sailing cruises, and for the kids and the adventurous, there's a pirate ship cruise called the Black Raven, which is a replica of a Spanish galleon, 74 feet long, with an entertaining pirate show on board. They do birthday parties. They do corporate team events. It looks like a very campy, but probably a really fun thing to do. I think we'll have to try that next time we're in town. Other options for water and eco tours include Anastasia Water Sports with kayaking and stand-up paddleboarding, Florida Water Tours, and St. Augustine Eco Tours, both of which specialize in dolphin and wildlife tours. Ripple Effect Eco Tours offers kayaking in nearby state parks, while Sea Serpent Tours offer airboat tours in nearby rivers. And that's interesting because most of the airboat tours in Florida are in the Everglades,
yes.
In the swampy area. So the fact they're doing an airboat tour in the Upper East Coast is interesting. And if you ever want to try an airboat, they're amazing. Yeah, very loud, but very amazing experience.
We hope this episode has given you some ideas about visiting St. Augustine, which is something we consider a must-do in Florida.
As always, details will be in the episode description. Check us out on our YouTube channel, Florida Travel Fanatics, or our website at www.floridatravelfanatics.com. Feel free to contact us directly via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or email. You can also join our private Facebook group. Do us a favor, leave us a 5-star rating on your podcast app. We'll put links to all of our social media in the episode notes. And as always, thanks for listening.
Sunny days ahead.